Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, the one, the only, the talented, tap dancing king of the polka circuit, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
It's pretty hard to do one-legged tap dancing to polka, but I have mastered it, Dave. And let me tell you something, I am getting booked nowhere for it, my friend. I think it's because the one-legged tap dancing is out of fashion, but man, I'm trying to fashion that stump into a glittery, shining tap dance of a shining star of the Midwest. So just bear with me as I get that stump a rolling, and we'll get it going.
Your stump a rolling.
Yeah.
I think that was an old Charlie Daniels album, if I remember.
It was.
Correctly.
It was. Yeah. It was after the Boggy Creek song. Yeah.
Hey, listen. I've had a couple of remarkable weeks. Mm-hmm. 2 weekends ago, I was up north, Duluth. I got to do the Paranormal Unity Conference up there. Last weekend here, that just passed, I was out at the Belvoir Winery and did the Strange Escapes event with Amy Bruni, Adam Berry, the Newkirks, John E.L. Tenney, Greg Lawson, myself. It was a lot of fun, a lot of cool people, great opportunity to be back out there mixing with the world again, Tim. I got to tell you, and everybody wanted me to send you love and affection and told me that they love you and miss you and hope to see you popping up at some events soon. So I wanted to make sure I mention that to you up front.
Well, I'd love to be there too. To all promoters out there, book me.
That's right.
There you go.
If you want Tim at these conferences, tell them you want Tim at these conferences. Well, I had the great pleasure 2 weeks ago, Tim, to make some new friends. As we were going along, I got to introduce some speakers I hadn't had a chance to meet with. I got a chance to sit in on some of the different lectures, have meals, drinks, hang out with some of these people. It was a lot of fun. And, I love when you kind of bridge that gap and make our world a little bit smaller. Everybody kind of comes together. And doing these events is a big part of that. And, I got to see, of course, our buddies from Destination Fear. Mm-hmm. They were always great. And it's just, I have to laugh because we all went downtown to go to the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And their mom had to drop them off at the bar.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They're adults now, but their mom drove them down to the bar. I just thought that was the cutest thing ever.
Well,
yeah.
Sweet.
And we got to hang out with them. But I got to hang out with two of the newest members of the Ghost Hunters franchise. And they have a documentary film out now called The Sleepless Unrest, where they spent 2 weeks inside the famous haunted home that inspired the Conjuring film. So I talked to them. I had such a great time, two of the loveliest people. And I said, I'd love to have you guys on the show. Let's talk about The Sleepless Unrest. Let's talk about your work in the paranormal. And they both agreed, Tim. And I didn't even have compromising photographs of them. It wasn't like they owed me a thing. They just agreed to do the show.
Wow.
That is weird.
That is unusual. Well, good on them. I mean, they're good people, yeah, exactly. It sounds like. Yeah.
Joining us, Rochelle Stratton is on the line with us. Brian Murray is on the line with us. Thank you both for coming here to be a part of the show today.
Thank you for having us.
No problem.
Now, I know I've got, Rochelle was telling us she's at home. She's working diligently at creating blankets to keep ghosts away from people through her crocheting. Brian, you're hiding from work in the backseat of your truck so that they don't see you. I appreciate you doing that. So,
he just blew his cover.
Oh, I mean, I heard that you're at a covert OSS meeting learning on how to infiltrate the Russian mafia. So I'm glad that you're able to carve out a section for us to be here today.
Heck yeah. I'm still looking at them, though. They're making eye contact, but we've got them.
Well, I want to dig into your backgrounds a little bit for listeners that are not familiar with you or where your stories began. Rochelle, how old were you when you began with this fascination in the paranormal?
Well, I had my first paranormal encounter or experience at 8 years old. I woke up in the middle of the night to someone standing at the foot of my bed. They were dressed in period clothing, like with bonnets and stuff, and was pretty freaked out. Told my mom about it, and she didn't believe me. The following night, my sister woke up to the same person standing at the foot of her bed. So after that, our mom was like, okay, there might be something to this a little bit. But when you're 8 years old, you're kind of limited on what you're able to do. So, I would read different books about ghosts and, all things paranormal. And then in my 20s, I started going and investigating. And with my sister, I would go to different ghost hunts. And eventually, she was like, hey, there's a paranormal group in our area and I want to join. And I told her, okay, well, you go ahead and go first. And if it's not a cult, then maybe I'll come too. And turns out
in the sand. Okay. If it's not a cult, count me in. I like that.
Yeah. I was like, you be the sacrificial lamb and we'll see how this goes.
Okay.
Well, she went, she told me how great all the people were and she loved it. And she's like, I like how they investigate. And I was like, well, that's awesome. Let's see if I can come along as well. Like tag along. It's my older sister. So I'm the baby. I'm used to tagging along. And she let me know that they said no. The co-founder said that they had enough people and they didn't really need me. And us Mars All women are extremely persistent. And she kept on it. And then eventually he agreed to let me come along and then became my best friend. So I like to bring that up every once in a while.
Oh.
That he didn't initially even want me.
Isn't that the way? Isn't that the way? If I had a dollar for everybody I've met who initially wanted nothing to do with me, I would be a trillionaire.
Yeah. Brian, would you like to explain yourself?
About not wanting you? Yeah. Like, it was pretty simple. I had a full team and then, I didn't need you. But now I don't... It's perfect now.
But your heart open. Obviously, you saw this amazing smile, this bubbly personality, the charm, the grace, the ability to go into small, dark, tight corners in crawl spaces and basements and realized this could be my new best friend.
Absolutely. And the persistence. She wasn't going to let it go. All right. I have no choice.
So I've apparently, I need to write a new paranormal book about he's just not that into you for the paranormal. How to decide if you should be part of a paranormal team. He's just not that into you. So you finally break that seal and you get to work with this team. Now, I have to ask you, when a team's told you no repeatedly, what keeps you pressing to try one more time? Because, you know, there are a lot of people out there, and I know this sounds like I'm being goofy with this question. There are a lot of people that write to me all the time saying, I can't find a team. Everybody's booked. They have too many members already, and I don't know anybody to start my own. Why were you so persistent in this?
Well, because it was a passion. Like, paranormal is a passion of mine, and I don't take no for an answer. I'm like, I don't have to be a part of the team. Just let me tag along, like, every once in a while. And I wasn't going to take no. I was like, I'm going to be a part of this team eventually. I just need to make sure that, like, I just need to meet them and hopefully I can win them over type thing. And it was funny because he did this interview because he interviews the people that are going to join the team. And he didn't ask me any questions. He asked me one question. It had nothing to do with the paranormal. And I was like, this is the weirdest guy ever. I think I'm going to make him my best friend. And he said, I have a very important question, and depending on how you answer it will determine whether you're on the team or not. I was like, okay. I was like thinking this is going to be like my theories on it or something really good, you know?
Oh my God. Don't tell me it was a Walking Dead question. How many people have you killed? How many walkers have you killed? No?
No.
Oh,
no.
Good. All right.
He said, if I had a birthday party and I had to invite someone for the entertainment and I had to choose between Lady Gaga or Kenny Chesney, who would I pick?
And obviously you said Lady Gaga.
Yeah, I said Lady Gaga because she'll put on one hell of a show.
Right.
And he said, okay. I said, so is that right? He says, I don't know. Flip a coin. If it's heads, you're in. If it's tails, you're out.
I like that as the lead of this team, Brian, you put a lot of deep thought into the process of how you accept new members. And the Lady Gaga, Kenny Chesney question, that's an imperative one. I understand that. And then the flip of the coin, right? Yeah. The paranormal is, you flip that coin. If you call heads, if the paranormal wants you in, Rochelle, it's going to tap it over to you. So that makes complete sense.
What was funny is I flipped the coin and we couldn't find the coin. It was gone. So a couple weeks ago, Brian and I were talking about this and kind of laughing. He's like, yeah, we never know. He's like, we still don't know if you're on the team because we never found that coin. I was like, okay, well, should we flip another one? He's like, yeah. I was like, I've been a part of the team in theory for so long now. But if you're saying technically I'm not, because we never found the coin, we'll just flip it again. Lost the coin again. And he told me to get out of the car on the side of the road. He's like, get out. I was like, Are you serious right now? But eventually we did find the coin, and it was heads. So I'm in officially. Thank goodness.
Well, congratulations. And thank you for stop wasting American currency like that.
Yeah. Welcome aboard. Welcome aboard, Michelle.
See, now we know what happens and how people find all these mysterious quarters, nickels, dimes, and pennies that appear out of nowhere. It's people trying to figure out if they can join a paranormal team. They flip the coin, it vanishes and appears somewhere else in the world. Mystery solved, Tim. We can shut down this episode.
I was going to say, there's a coin shortage, kids. Quit playing with the coins. They're asking us to spend them, not flip them into random places.
Good God. Hey, I'm flipping through. I'm like, God, where am I going to watch the Sleepless Unrest film? I'm not going to find anywhere, unless, of course, I want to watch it on Apple TV or YouTube or Google Play or Fandango Now or Vimeo or Microsoft or Vudu or Redbox. Oh, wait, you wanted DVDs and VHS? Well, I guess they have them at Walmart, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at Fi. So there, it seems like you might have one or two outlets for this film to be seen, guys. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, this is pretty exciting. Now, Brian, talk to me a little bit about your beginnings. How old were you? Were you also an 8-year-old girl that saw a pilgrim ghost in your room?
16-year-old girl.
Excellent.
I was 16. I went with my buddy I actually went to a girl's house to try to date her. And me and my buddy were there, Matt. And as soon as she walked into the bathroom, her mom came out of the back room and she sat down a tray of drinks. She set it on the table, and behind her was a man standing. The man was grayish. He looked at me, he turned, and he went away. I looked at Matt. I was like, I think it's time to go. And to this day, I have not spoke to that girl. So that's
she thinks they're
for me.
She thinks they're still dating.
It's a possibility.
That is that's the official ghosting. So not only did you deal with the paranormal, this poor girl dealt with your ghosting situation. Well done.
Well, I apologize. I don't remember her name. That's terrible to say, but her house was not where I wanted it to be, and I apparently needed to get out of there as soon as possible. That moment terrified me enough to start researching everything I could. You know, I started watching Sightings, the show Sightings, mm-hmm. read different books and things like that about it, because it scared me. And I was like, I'm going to figure this one out. I saw this person standing directly in front of me within 5 feet, and he disappeared. My buddy saw it, and that's what did it for me. Literally, that was it.
Now
I had to figure it out.
Let me ask you, now you get to look back at it through the eyes of an adult who has studied, researched, and been out in the field. What do you feel that experience was? Do you feel that you were in contact and seeing an actual disincarnate soul? Were you looking through the looking glass of the afterlife? Or was this a time shift? Do you believe that for that brief moment, you were seeing through the shifting sands of time to another era?
What I think it was truly is a way to see what I was supposed to be a part of, what I was supposed to do. This is my passion. I am a construction worker by trade. I was also in the Marine Corps, but my passion is the paranormal. And I think by seeing that, I feel like that's what opened my eyes. I think it why I was supposed to see it that day. And I think that's what got me started. I don't know if it was a time shift or anything. I think it was one of those sightings or callings that you were meant to see at that moment. That's going to drive you for the rest of your life to figure out what's going on. That's exactly what I think it is.
Okay. Rochelle, what about you, Rochelle? Did you, now you look back at your experience that kind of ignited this fire and passion for you? What do you make of that time?
I mean, when I wish that I would have researched the history of the house more when I was younger. But I don't know if it was residual. It didn't seem like it was residual based off of it showing up at my bed and then my sister's bed the following night. And I don't know, maybe there was a tear in time or something. And I was lucky enough to experience, see someone that maybe lived there before, or maybe our time, I'm having a hard time with my words today. I apologize.
Words can be hard. I understand.
I know, right? Maybe the two parallels, universes collided or opened, and I was able to see. Maybe it was happening at the same time. Maybe I was in someone's bed, and they're like, hey, what are you doing in here? I don't know. But I just...
Does that happen to you often? What are you doing here? I don't know.
I feel like it happens more than it should. Well, there's a couple times that Brian and I have gotten in situations where, like, we've been in a restricted area, but we didn't realize it was restricted. And then someone's, like, investigating, because it's just our luck that we're investigating. We're like, hey, let's go in this area. And then, like, a little bit later, the person in charge is like, oh, my God, I'm going to show you this restricted area. No one gets to go. And we're like, okay, cool. Sounds great. And then they take us exactly where we were. And we were like, oh, yeah, this is awesome. I'm seeing it for the first time.
Obviously, kids, we don't condone going to restricted areas. These are professional breaker and enterers, apparently. But you guys have now been invested in this. You got to be a part of the Ghost Hunters franchise. And for a lot of people, would you give us kind of your perspective of getting involved in reality TV? Was it everything you hoped it would be? Was it terrifying? Was it exciting? What was it like? And Brian, why don't we start off with you on this one?
I would say it was exciting, but probably the hardest thing that I've ever had to do. You're opening yourself to a whole lot of criticism and a whole lot of work for the world to actually look at. And it's not an easy thing. Heck, I've been to Iraq, and I would say being in the TV world it's harder. There's a lot to it, you know, and you got to deal with things that you don't normally deal with. You got to deal with people's emotions, people that you don't know. But on the other hand, I think it was great. It was an eye-opening experience. It's led us to meet a lot of great people, go to a lot of great locations. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity, obviously. I want to continue to do it. That's my take.
Rochelle, what about you?
It was a weird experience for me. I still don't think that it's fully set in or clicked. That I was on Ghost Hunters, or that we have a documentary out. It's so bizarre because it was never a goal. I don't know if that makes sense. Like,
sure.
I got in the paranormal, the goal wasn't to be on TV. The goal was to help people and to experience things and document it and, you know, have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of lucked out. I think it's luck. I feel very blessed and lucky to have been a part of Ghost Hunters, and that they thought enough of my investigation skills to even want me to be a part of that team. But even when we were doing, like, it's weird to me because, like, when we just talked about the Paracon or the Para-Unity Convention. I didn't expect anyone to know who I was. Like, I'm Rochelle. I'm from Godfrey. Like, I'm a hygienist and a mom. Like, and I hunt ghosts. people were coming up and they knew who we were. And I was like taken back. I was grateful. Like, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that they actually know who I am, which a few of them laughed at me about it. And they're like, you're so sweet that you don't think that we would know who you were. I was like, I don't expect it. And I think that it's because it hasn't really clicked for me that we were on TV. I know that we, like Brian said, social media can be a little bit hard. Everyone in the paranormal field that has had a TV show or is on currently on a TV show, sometimes you don't always get to see, like, the real you or the real personality. Like, you only get to see bits and pieces of it. And I think what's hard is people judging you based off of just what they're seeing. Because
I would agree.
That thing.
No,
it's like there's so much more to me than just what you're seeing in this 50-minute episode or 43-minute episode. And yeah, so it's been eye-opening. But everyone that we meet out in the field is super nice to us and sweet, and I love it. And I mean, I just feel very blessed, but it is a weird thing. Like my husband was saying that currently my 6-year-old is watching The Sleepless Unrest on loop downstairs on Vudu. And it was funny because I was making breakfast and he's like, I want to watch the Conjuring movie. And my husband's like, okay, which my 6-year-old is really into ghosts and everything. And he started to put the Conjuring movie on and he was like, no, I want to watch Mom's movie. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I want to watch your movie. And so he put it on and he's watched it like 3 times this morning. I was like, are you tired of this yet? He's like, no, I think I seen another ghost in it. So he's like, I keep rewinding it. I'm like,
wow,
my see, little slackers, paranormal.
You slackers missed out the ghosts he's seeing. Nice job.
No.
Nice job. Well, that's exciting stuff. Now, Brian, what about you getting on a show? You know, I know a lot of the paranormal teams out there that was never their inclination, but you get to go on a show with a branding like Ghost Hunters and work with one of the OGs. Was that intimidating a role to step into?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we didn't know that it was for Ghost Hunters. Rochelle and I had done a few Skype calls and Skype interviews for, you know, a few different paranormal shows, and they never really turned out to anything. So when this call came, I actually looked at the number and thought it was a bill collector. So I went outside, looked at the number, was like, well, who didn't I pay this time? And it was Pilgrim Studios. Went ahead and done the interview, got lucky, and then to find out that Grant Wilson was a part of it, it was like, oh my God, this is a whole new set of standards you got to live up to. It was very intimidating.
But, a lot of pressure.
Yeah, it was a lot of pressure. You're not just going on a paranormal show. This is Ghost Hunters. And, you know, there was very few shows before Ghost Hunters that was out. I could honestly say that they paved the way for a lot of people in this field. And now you're going to be a part of it. Don't screw that up.
Yeah, that's got to be kind of a daunting task, again, to have that label. Do you wish the show would have been named anything but Ghost Hunters? I'm just curious what your takes are on that. I wonder if it played against you because there was too much expectations, whereas if it would have been called, you know, Haunting the Otherworldly Realm or any other title that would have sold the idea that you're hunting ghosts, would it have gone differently, do you believe?
I don't know. I think that the name that it was Ghost Hunters really to go in and put my best foot forward at all fronts. I wanted to make sure that everything that I was doing was true and legit and they're, you know, honest. I felt like it helped us with that name because it made us better investigators. More studying and research that we had to do. That when you're a team in your backyard, you're just going to have that experience. But this, we were really trying to help people. They were getting caught, couldn't sleep in their homes and things like that. So I think it helped with having that.
Very cool. Rochelle, what are your takeaways from working on that show and being part of it for 2 seasons?
I mean, like I said, I feel very blessed to be a part of it. It was a lot of pressure to live up to. You definitely don't want to tarnish the name. And I think that we did a decent job of trying to live up to that name. I feel blessed. I don't know if it would have gone different if it was named something else. I try not to look at the could have been's type of thing, and just be grateful for the opportunity.
Did you find yourself during any of these episodes, I mean, truly, really scared to the point where that experience still impacts you today?
I will say that it takes a lot to scare me. It doesn't take much to startle me. My children can startle me if I don't know that they're there and turn around. Loud noises can startle me, but scared, like where I still don't feel like I've had an experience where I've been scared to the point where It sounds horrible. It sounds like a horrible paranormal investigator. I get it. I want to be scared where I have to leave a location because I fear for my life. I don't know why. And I think it's like this Hollywood thing in my head. I'm like, I want to be so scared of activity that's happening that I have to run and get out.
I haven't had that experience yet. I get it. More is, you know, when you're so many years in, Tim and I have been, you know, actively investigating the paranormal, even though we've had it in our lives before. We've been actively investigating it now for almost 16 years. And you kind of get to the point, which is funny, when you do some of these paranormal events where there's ghost hunting, right? You take these teams of viewers and fans out ghost hunting, and you forget that this EVP is maybe their first opening to the paranormal. And whereas we're all kind of jaded, we're like, okay, it said get out in a demonic voice and called us out by name. Yeah, that's freaky. What else you got for me, right? Like, I want that flaming head thrown at me down the hall by the headless horseman as well. Because it's kind of like, you know, we've ridden every other ride in the theme park. We're waiting for that scary ride to drop us just to give us that kick again. Do you end up feeling the same way, Brian? Are you always looking for that next thrill of what more can we uncover? What new thing could pop up that might actually, you know, get past the jaded scab of experience from doing the investigating for so long?
Absolutely. I feel like there's a lot of times where you can just get so, it's so stale at times that for me personally, I've actually looked at like, I can't do this for much longer. It's so stale. And then I have that experience that opens my eyes again. It's thrilling. That's why I think like the sleepless unrest was such a good idea. Once we got there, now we're going to live in a location for a couple of weeks and see how things go. We're not going to actually go chase things out. We're going to see if they come around and do their business around us without us actually having to go figure it out. So it was a new experience. We're not going and running these EVP sessions and doing things like that. I will say that in St. Augustine, the lighthouse, I did encounter something. I'm not going to say that it scared me, but it's something that I've never encountered before that still to this day, and it's been a few years, has got me startled. Actually saw trees moving like King Kong was coming through them. I can hear things. I can hear something running towards us. I've got two thermal cams. I can't see any heat signatures of anything yet. I'm hearing it coming at us and I'm seeing leaves and tree branches breaking, but I can't see anything.
Geez, I'm thinking Predator. Are you having this sense?
Exactly, yeah. What I thought.
Yeah.
It was literally, I could see Brandon. I could see the producers. I can see the trees on the thermal camera. But when I point the thermal image camera right towards where the sound is coming and I'm watching the trees and things break and I'm hearing the footsteps running, I can't see anything. That to me is one of those experiences where I was like, okay, this has got me all messed up and it's had me messed up for a long time. I still haven't figured it out. And now I want to go find stuff like that all the time. You know, it was totally different. And
right, that's almost worse, right? Because yeah, you don't see it, so your imagination starts playing worse games on you than what it was.
It was intense. I know that even our sound guy, he pulled his knife out and was like, I'll stab it, whatever it is. I can't see it. our Kendall, our cameraman, he also the director of Sleepless Unrest, he fell over and was in the bush, but he kept his camera on there just to see if we couldn't see anything. We took this footage to the zoo that was close, and they couldn't come up with any animal that would be in that area, or it didn't act like any animal. So scared? No, but I will say that it was an experience that I wish I could figure out. It keeps me wanting to go, you know, go out more and see if I can't figure, you know, see more things like that.
Very cool. Let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Sleepless Unrest, the new documentary that's out and available. And there is a link for it on today's program guide, folks, so you can find a way to watch it. There's links. That link takes you to another page that shows all the links where the documentary is available. Stay tuned. We've got more coming your way. I'm Dave. That's Tim. This is Darkness Radio. Thank you. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for joining us today. Hey, remember, tonight we have a brand new live Darkness Radio Presents. You can tune in tonight, watch it live on our YouTube page, watch it on my social media pages. We want you to be a part of the mix. If you have questions for our guests, concerns, thoughts, ideas, we want you to be a part of it. We're back doing a special live video presentation tonight. The episode, for those of you listening to the podcast, will be available tomorrow as a podcast form as well. Today, we are talking with two members of the A&E series Ghost Hunters, and they have a new documentary out called The Sleepless Unrest, where they went to spend 2 weeks in the real Conjuring home. And joining us, Rachel Stratton, now my brain's trying to read ahead on me here, and Brian Kai Murray. Right? Did I get both of those? I'm trying to Hollywood you two up so that you sound more, you know, more fancy pantsy. Rochelle and Brian are here with us today. The Sleepless Unrest, the new documentary. You guys, obviously, everybody saw that movie. Got to be one of the best horror psychological thriller movies in the last 20 years. That was creepy enough in itself. But then to realize that it's not just a horror movie, it's based on a real story, an ongoing story of a home that is so haunted. Families have been there and shared these experiences, and they continue to do so. I know you were psyched to get in there, obviously. The concept of locking in for a full 2 weeks, though, was there ever any reticence on either one of your parts to absorb that much energy one way or another? Brian, why don't we start with you?
I don't think we went in knowing that it was going to be that long. We went there to just do an investigation, and it ended up locking the door and Kendall saying, "We're going to make a movie." Okay. Once the door shut, we didn't come out for 2 weeks.
Wait a minute. So you went there for an investigation, and then you just became the guests that refused to leave?
Basically.
Oh, I mean,
that's not the case, Brian.
It is.
Folks, for those of you listening that run haunted locations around the United States, should these two show up on your door, expect that it could be one night or a month. You don't know.
We were invited, and we were going to hang out and investigate. Like, it was on our bucket list, and we were going to hang out and investigate. Uh-huh. And it ended up turning into this. Which was really no different than what we had planned anyway, because we were going to film like stuff in case we had a paranormal encounter. But we really just wanted to put ourselves in the homeowner's shoes. And it was so different because Corey and Jen Heinzen know that their house is haunted. They're not scared. They're not looking for answers type of thing. So there was nothing really riding on it. We could really just be there and experience it and live how they live. I've stayed at haunted locations overnight before and slept there, but staying for 2 weeks is a whole different ball game. It wears on you in a different way. And I'll say it starts affecting your thinking, and even as paranormal investigators, when activity happens, you're excited, right? Like, you want to find out what it was and keep going. Towards the end of the 2 weeks, stuff would happen. And I was like, stop. Like, I don't want, I'm so tired. Can we do this at a different time? I'm like, you're constantly making a ruckus. Can we just, like, I don't know how people live in haunted houses. I have a different, like.
Well, let me ask you about that. For them. Like, you go oh my in. God. You go in, you meet the Heinzens, two lovely people. How big, honestly, from both of you, how big of the concept do you have going in that there might be some tomfoolery? Obviously, they've turned it into an attraction for the paranormal. Are you afraid in any way, shape, or form going into this? There might be some shenanigans happening, that they're maybe trying to make it more scary or, you know, doing things to make it appear haunted. Did that cross either of your minds during this?
It didn't cross mine at all. We became friends with Corey and Jen before we ever went to the Conjuring House. And they're honest people. you know, so it never crossed my mind. I did think that, you know, we may get there and may not be as active as I'm expecting. Just because any type of location like that, when it has a really big reputation, sometimes you get there and it's not as active as you were thinking it was going to be. Also, I think it depends on the spirits there and whether they want to interact with you. But no, at no point in time did I personally think that they were doing anything to kind of play it up.
Brian, what about you?
I didn't either. Corey and myself were both Marines, and I know that, you know, he's a straight shooter. I can tell that from the moment I met him. That's why I liked him. And once we got there, I do remember walking in thinking, okay, this is it. This is one of the most iconic cases in paranormal history, and I'm here. And let's see what goes down. You know, I didn't think that it was going to be the way it was. I was expecting, you know, I've been to a lot of locations before. I was expecting it to be like that. It was a lot more. By the end of the 2 weeks, I was, like Rochelle said, it was to the point where I was like, okay, got it, noted. You're here, you're doing things. I need a break. You're wearing on me. I'm tired, I'm exhausted. I don't want it anymore.
How do you think the Heinzens live with that, having that around 24/7? This is their home. There is no place to escape to. This is where you live.
I mean, multiple times when things would happen, and towards the beginning of the week, when we would, like, you know, get excited about it and, like, say, oh my God, did you see that? Or do you hear that? Or whatever, you know, trying to talk to each other, Corey would say, well, yeah, guys, it's a haunted house. And it was like, I don't know if they become numb to it almost.
That's why.
Or it's like they're just so used to it. But towards the end, like, I feel like we were only there for 2 weeks and I was almost starting to become numb to it. That's like, when you submerge yourself that much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... I've always been interested to go to a location for more than a day or two to really kind of absorb it. But you're right. I mean, if you're in a place that's active, Waverly Hills, Rolling Hills, those are a couple of the locations I've been to where the energy is just so chaotic that I don't know that I could handle being locked in there for a week, not because of fear, just because of the overwhelming nature of the energy that's kind of being displaced there. And that, you know, the kind of paradigm shifting reality of being in a location that's that active, I would guess it can, you know, really wear down. And then you're never really getting solid sleep, right? Because you guys have got this creepy motion detection music box that goes off. You're hearing footsteps. I mean, that's got to be overwhelming as well, because now not only are you having experiences in your waking time, but your sleep is interrupted constantly.
I kind of feel like it was almost like I had a newborn again. We're like, you know, where it's like constantly there's a cry or a change of breath. Like I was never truly, really asleep, like hard. It was more sleeping, but listening. And then, like, I don't know if that makes sense. Like almost like totally. A newborn type of hours where it's right. Like every couple hours I'm up.
Difference is every couple hours you're up and you get to cradle your child lovingly and feed them and give them affection. And in this case, you don't know if you're going to be dragged out of bed and pulled to hell. There's a slight difference, Rochelle. Right, that's all I'm saying.
Right. I mean,
like, literally,
I was going to say, you haven't met my children. I'm just kidding. I love my little angels. They're so sweet.
I would say 3 hours a night, maybe, was the most we got. And during those 3 hours, if you could even call that sleep, your eyes would pop open. You would, like, Rochelle and I's beds were shaking on a nightly basis.
Can we keep this family friendly, please? This is a family.
Oh my God.
Oh no, please continue.
Yeah. Now, you guys are in a room. I watched this. First of all, that room would have made me paranoid as hell. The slanted ceiling, your bed, little twin bed tucked up against the wall. I love that you're both in twin beds with like the foot of the beds facing each other. You've got the little creepy ass motion detection music box on the floor between you. I don't see. I don't know. That's where I want comfort and peace. I don't know that I want to know something standing there between us watching us sleep. So I give you guys a lot of credit. But yeah, you were saying there was thumping and bumping and beds would jump almost and move, or it would feel like something tapped you. Or do you think they were trying to spook you, trying to get your attention because you were in that vulnerable place between sleep and awake when maybe the ghost realm is a little bit more accessible?
The way we put it, the way we've kind of thought this out was when we first got there, this house has seen people investigate all the time. People come in with cameras. People want to, you know, television shows have been there. So when we came there, there's more cameras. They were going to either be active or not. This is just another group of people that are coming in there. Well, we didn't do what a lot of people do when they go in there. They focus on the bad things that happened to the parents and stuff like that. We didn't do that. We kind of just moved in and sat there and tried to figure out what was going on by just going about our day rather than going and searching it out. So I would say the first couple of days, you know, it was like, oh, okay, these guys are a little different. After 3 or 4 days, we thought that the entities in the house were like, hey, I'm interested a little bit more in these guys. They're not doing what the normal people that come here are doing. By the end of it, it was like, hey, we don't want you to leave. So we don't want you to sleep. We enjoy what you're doing here, and we're going to bother you. It was like a nightly basis that you could hear, feel, almost. You just knew something was there with you. And I just feel like they got used to us like we got used to them. And by the end of it, they didn't want us to actually go. That's why it was so active towards the end.
I actually wanted to, with the music box there, yeah, it's scary, but at the same time, I wanted confirmation because I'm like, my bed keeps getting bumped all night long and Brian's bed is too. I want to know if someone's doing it or like, what's going on? Am I jerking myself awake or is someone actually nudging the bed and making me wake up? So when we put the music box there, I was like, this, if it goes off, then it'll almost be like confirmation to me that someone else is doing it. Also, this isn't in the film, but it was scary for me. You've seen how close the bed was to the wall and things. There's probably less than a foot between that bed and the wall where you could get in between. I had my back to it. I was asleep and my back started getting cold. I adjusted my blanket, kind of brushed it off like it was probably, you know, poor insulation or it's an old house. It's starting to snow again. And I fell back asleep. I woke up shortly after to someone going behind me. And I was scared at that moment. Vera said she was watching the DVR camera and she seen exactly when it happened. She said, you were sleeping, your eyes shot wide open. She said, you got real tense and then you pulled your blanket up. And I laughed because I pulled my blanket up like a kid. You know, you think that blanket's going to protect you from the monster.
Sure.
And she's like, you closed your eyes real tight. And she said, but you did what I wouldn't have done. You opened one eye back up and was looking around. I never rolled over to see who was back there because I was like, that's such a tiny space that whoever's back there, I don't believe is living. And I still have to sleep here for a good while. And yeah, like 11 more days. So I think I'm good and we can talk in a little bit, but not right now. And Kendall did ask me, he's like, why didn't you grab the GoPro and start filming? I was like, Kendall, the GoPro was on the ground, which means I was going to have to lean over the edge of the bed to grab it. I've seen too many scary movies. I'm like, that's how you get jerked underneath the bed.
Right.
And taken. Or when you come back up and you turn the GoPro on, there is someone, a face behind you. I was like, I couldn't do it. I was like, we still had too much time and I have watched too many scary movies. I was like, you don't, at this moment, everyone else is asleep. I'm not going to go looking for this ghost. Like, that's how you get knocked off in a horror film, you know?
Hey, trust me. I feel you. The first time I spent the night at the Lizzie Borden house, I slept in the room where Mrs. Borden, Abigail Borden, had been brutally murdered. And I woke up with my hand dangling over the side of the bed just above where she died. And man, I couldn't pull that hand underneath that blanket quick enough. And I tried to make myself a burrito so no body part would go off that side of the bed for that same fear that it's like, yeah, I love the paranormal. I'm here. I want to investigate, but I don't want to feel like some creepy dead hand hold mine in the middle of the night. That's, yeah, pulling you down. There is that limit where comfort and want to understand and investigate kind of break away. And bed is your safe zone, right?
Isn't it as funny as an adult that you automatically retreat back to childlike habits when you get scared, even though we do this constantly, right? You're putting yourselves in these positions. You retreat back when you're in that bed and something's going on. You're like, nope, tuck all the feet, tuck everything. The blanket's going to protect me.
Okay, so let me say one thing, right? We all feel better under our blankets. And let's face it, 90 to 95% of demons and ghosts are repelled by a good cotton, Egyptian cotton thread sheet. But, but there is a scene in this documentary, to me, was the most unnerving scene, and I need some clarification.
I think I know exactly what scene you're talking about.
Right. It's your other two investigators that are there with you. And this is Kendall and Vera Welpton. And they're in bed together, sleeping. Now, at first, I thought one of them moved their leg and the blanket moved up and settled. But then rewatching it, I had to call my wife in to look at this, and the hairs on the back of my neck were standing up. And I'm like, what's going on? She goes, something's crawling in bed with them. Was that what appeared, or was it just a movement of a leg and a random fart or something that moved that blanket? What do you think really took place?
Actually, that is a claim in that room. People have said that's happened to them.
That is terrifying. That is a terrifying scene to me, because again, it's out of, when I watched the first Paranormal Activity movie, I was fine. So you see that blanket start moving as though something's underneath it with them. That's terrifying. That moment was really unnerving to me, because again, you feel like you're safe and in slumber. Obviously it didn't mean any harm. It just wanted to get between them and spoon. But that was a very creepy ass scene. How did they react to seeing that footage and realizing they weren't alone?
Shocked. Very shocked. I could honestly say that, had they seen it or it happened in, you know, where they were awake, you would have seen a lot of running around, excitement, but scared. I was laying in the bed one night and literally was asleep, and I got almost pushed completely over. Like, it rocked me. And I opened my eyes and I screamed at Rochelle, did you just do that? Like, it moved me so much in that bed that I was like, well, I didn't go back to sleep at all. Because I was like, something just moved me. And I'm not a little guy. It moved me. I mean, it shook me to my core, to be honest with you. To the point when I'd have to go to the restroom, which is downstairs.
Right.
When I walked down those stairs, a lot of times I'd ask Rochelle, get up. We're going. I don't care. I don't care if I'm in the Marine Corps. I don't care. You're going.
Yeah. But I started cutting his drinks off at a certain hour. I was like, all right, Captain Pee Pee Pants, you can't have any more fluids after this time, because you're cutting into the 3 hours that I'm getting to sleep.
Don't act like I didn't walk down there with you two.
You did, okay. You did. But let me tell you how Brian would wake. Okay. Brian would wake me up.
Can we go back to Captain Pee Pee Pants? That's how I'm going to refer to you, by your now non de plume Captain Pee Pee Pants, wherever I see
love it.
Just so you know.
Good.
Okay. But when Captain Pee Pee Pants would have to go to the bathroom,
right?
He would wake me up in one of three ways, which always are not great. Okay. Let me just tell you, especially in a haunted house. So the first way would be violently grabbing my foot to wake me up and be like, Rochelle. Okay. So that's not cool. Right. Cause then I feel like I'm getting snatched out of bed. And I told him, like, don't be doing that. And he's like, okay. So then there's another time that he's standing over me, just standing there till I wake up to the shadow standing there. He's like, I have to pee. And I'm like, okay, well, that's creepy as well. And then the other times would be him squatting down and saying, Rochelle. And he's like, how am I supposed to wake you up? I said, from your bed at a normal voice and say, Rochelle, I have to go to the bathroom. Don't, like, just whisper my name or grab me or hover over me. Like, I'm going to have a heart attack.
So, Brian, was this in an attempt to try to frighten her, or are you just that childlike that?
I was not trying to scare her. I was literally like, I need stairs in the first place. Happens every time I walk down them. Happens when I'm just like, look, I need some help, okay? This is getting to a little bit much. Somebody's jerked me in the bed. Somebody has tried to talk.
And he apparently, Rochelle is not realizing the way he says things are just as awkward as his way of waking you up. I don't think you should ever admit somebody's jerking in the bed.
No, like, listen, I'm used to that.
Brian, the spirit world is giving you a timeout. They keep cutting your audio. They're like, no, enough from you. This is insane.
Thanks, guys.
Rochelle, so what's the thought? I want to know, honestly, what is your thought on it? I've fought the urge when I've been unnerved at a place to ask somebody to go with me for fear that the big bad ghost hunter is going to look like a chicken. But I often wonder, what good is it for me to bring someone with me where I'm going to go? Because, we all joke about, I don't have to be faster than the ghost. I just have to be faster than you. Right. So, am I going to sweep your knee and take off running? Am I going to shove you at the spirit and then make a break for it? What's the real thinking? Safety in numbers, that the ghost isn't going to show themselves to two investigators that they're obviously messing with already. What is the thing you're trying to tell yourself is the comfort level in going and having somebody join you? As you make your way to the restroom in the middle of the night.
I just think that it might be safety in numbers. Also, like, if something happens, you have someone else there to witness it, so you don't feel nuts. Also, throw them in front of you, use them as a shield. Like, I feel like if stuff's about to go down,
right,
we're all going to turn into really horrible people. I feel like it's going to be like, he's my best friend, but like,
he's my best friend, but somebody's got to go.
Somebody's got to go. And I feel like he would opt to do that anyway, because he's kind of a protector for me. Like, so like, he won't be offended. Like, he would do it anyway. I don't know.
You just tell yourself that, Rochelle. He wouldn't be offended if I sweep his knee and shove him at the ghost. He would want it that way.
Yeah. Let me tell you, there's been times that Brian, we were on an event, and we had a kid at one of our events, and he crawled under a table, and the table was closest to me, and Brian was sitting on the other side, and Brian yelled at the kid and was like, you creepy little son of a gun, like, don't do that stuff. Like, you can't be crawling under tables. He tried to push me in front of him and then said, you're scaring Rochelle. I was like, yeah, but you used me as a body. Don't be doing that. You scared Rochelle. I don't know. I think, like I said, I think that everybody would turn into I feel like we'll turn into bad people if stuff actually starts to go down, because we're going to be throwing everyone in front of, I don't know.
What kind of kid crawls on the ground during an investigation underneath the table and just pops out?
You found him.
I found him.
Yeah.
We love that kid, though. He's great. He comes to...
He's great.
Like, yeah, he brings Brian snacks. And, yeah, we love him to death. He's come to quite a couple of events. Yeah.
All right, so you're steeped in a location like this. Obviously, the question is going to be, you know, you're so involved now with the spirits or whatever energy's there. Was there any residual effect on you when you return home? Did either of you feel as though you weren't alone on your journey back after this?
Absolutely. Like, literally got home and was thinking about the location nonstop, having nightmares about the place, had the feeling, well, I'd be at work and I would have the feeling that literally I needed to be at that house. And then stuff started happening at my house. Yeah, I bet that was for 2 to 3 months.
How do your families react to that then when, you know, stuff, what you're doing starts following you home? Are they bothered by it or is it just old hat to them?
I think they're used to it a little bit, but like my two children, they're still young, you know, one's 14 and one's 10. Obviously I brought the doll back home and my kid wanted to see the doll. I opened up the case and when I was showing him the doll, the case slammed shut and he literally said, okay, well, that's about enough of that. I'm out of here. Don't need to see that anymore. And he went upstairs. So they're used to it. And I think they just deal with it. I guess they feel like I'm going to help them out if anything happens or whatever. But
what about you, Rochelle? Yeah. Did you have any residual effect after being in the Conjuring house for 2 weeks?
Yes, I did. I feel like activity at the house started spiking. When we got home, I was having nightmares, not necessarily nightmares. I was dreaming about the house. I was very, possessive over the house. Like I would see people post pictures and things and I'm like, hey, that's my spot at the dining room table type thing. And I was seeing shadows and things were moving. At one point in time, I was in the kitchen and I was talking to my husband and behind me, a cookie sheet moved. And my husband's a skeptic. Okay. And he looked at me. I said, oh, it's because it's cooling down. And he said, no, that's not how that pan, like, that's not how a pan moves when it's cooling down. He said, you brought something home. I said, no. Like at that point, I hadn't told him that I've been seeing shadows in the house or hearing footsteps and the dog was acting weird and the kids were acting weird. And then he told me that he had been seeing shadows in the house. And I was like, okay. He's like, so whatever you did, you need to undo it type of thing. He's like, I'm cool with you doing it because you like it. But like when you start bringing work home, like right. Not cool with it.
It's bad enough when you have to bring Brian back, right? And have barbecues. Let's not, the fleshies are bad enough. Let's leave the spirit world out there.
Yeah. So anyway.
What do you mean, yeah?
Yeah. I think we're breaking new ground. This is good couples therapy for you guys as coworkers.
Brian, my husband loves Brian. My fate, like they both talk just the way me and Michelle love each other. Chris and Brian love each other. Like we talk about our spouses to them. And then Brian and I actually can tell each other what the other one's spouse is probably means or is feeling and why they're mad at them. So that's, it's good having a best friend that is the opposite sex because they give you a different perspective. But anyway, so the house did have activity. Like my house seems like I was encountering some things. And then it died down and I can say that since we, you know, announced the doc and have been talking about it more and our experiences, stuff has started happening again at my house.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, do you do anything ritualistically to try to clear yourself, cleanse yourself? Do you think by continually giving these spirits, this energy, it is potentially dangerous for you and your family?
I try to keep thinking that spirits are people, that they're just not living. I'm not scared of normal people, like living people. So don't be scared of them, like give them your boundaries and it'll be okay. So typically what I do is I, when we leave a haunted location, tell them that they can't follow us home. And then, if something on the rare occasion when I forget to say that, if something does follow me home, I tell them like, hey, you're not allowed to be here. You need to go back for where you come from and I'll come back and visit you, but you can't be here. I don't want you scaring my kids. And it typically stops. I've been kind of dismissive of the stuff happening right now. Like, I'm like, oh, we have a lot of windows. It's probably just a shadow from like a car driving by. I haven't seen anything move other than that cookie sheet, which I didn't see. My husband seen it. It was behind me. So I don't know. I'm kind of waiting, which sounds stupid. I'm not giving it much attention. I'm trying to ignore it.
I got you.
And yeah. But
is it something that now knowing that the spirit world, when you kind of entrench yourself in something that deeply, will attach itself to you? Is there anything you wish you would have done differently in regards to the documentary and your investigation?
I mean, in hindsight, we did bring some stuff home and I wouldn't have done that. But like we've said before, after 2 weeks of having your senses and nerves constantly on high alert, you're and not getting any sleep, your brain starts not functioning necessarily as, on all cylinders like it normally would. Where normally if someone was going to give us a gift, which I also didn't think too much of it because it was a gift and it wasn't like we were taking it without asking. I would probably say, no, it's okay. But I did bring stuff home. I brought some dirt home, which I was going to use for an experiment at the house. And it was almost by accident. They told me I could have the dirt. And I was like, oh, okay. But when we were packing, I just threw a bunch of stuff in my suitcase. And when I got home, realized I had thrown that in my suitcase as well.
Crazy stuff. This house, this is the real deal then. This isn't just some 70s, you know, drug-induced over-drinking party house that people mistook for being paranormal. It's continuing that legacy of the supernatural there.
It was definitely the hardest investigation that I've been on, but I think it was the most rewarding. I learned a lot about myself, and I learned a lot about how I want to do my investigation, my investigations moving forward. But intense, I mean, that's the word. It was very difficult. I've never thrown myself into a location like I did there. And like she was saying, with bringing the objects home, by the end of the 2 weeks, were we thinking right? I don't know. I almost thought about it as being like a victory. I'm going to take a piece of this house with me because, in a sense, I made it, you know? And right. I want to remember this, not just watching it on, like, you know, a DVD or anything like that. But this is something that was a challenge, and it was fun. We had a great time, but it was also something that, you know, not a lot of people, in my opinion, have had the chance to do yet. And I'm hoping that they will now, you know, get out there and try to challenge themselves and, you know, investigate a little bit different. Does that make any sense? Does that
make sense? No, I get you. I get you. What about you, Rochelle? What is this, you know, what has this done for you in the way of, you know, hearing the legend, the lore, being in it and realizing it's very real? How does this impact you going forward?
I constantly want to go back. And from here on out, any investigation I do, I want to stay for an extended period of time. I feel like the interactions you have are different. You get more of a sense what people are actually going through, a more sense of the space and whoever may be there. And yeah, it's changed my outlook. Like, I don't want to just go and investigate for a couple hours. I want to get immerse myself into it. And the Conjuring House is one of those places that we're going back. We'll be back there in a couple weeks. And I can't wait. I don't know. I just There's something about that house. I've told people that that house has a personality to it. And it's the most peaceful yet active location I've ever been in, where it makes you want to be there. But then that makes me cautious, because I said it's like one of those people that you meet that's nothing but nice to you, but you still, there's something off about them that you don't quite like and you don't understand what it is. That house is like that. Like, it seems peaceful, but I'm like, you don't get the reputation that you have because you're all sunshine and rainbows. At some point in time, you've shown an ugly side to you, and I think that you're capable of it. And I'm not going to test the limits to push it to that, because I try to be respectful when I investigate, but I'm very intrigued on what happened that got it to that point where it responded right the way it did.
Why do you think that the ghosts stay there all this time? What do you think is their end game?
I mean, there's a couple theories of people saying that there's a portal outside. Maybe if you think about maybe it was someone's family home, they built it and they're attached to it because they had good memories there. I really don't know. I honestly don't know who's there. I think there's multiple spirits there. I think there's some residual and I think there's some intelligent, but I don't know.
Does that ever bother either of you that a haunting like this takes place and it really doesn't seem to make sense why they would stay there? Does it ever concern you to what might become of us in the afterlife? Are we trapped? Are we stuck? Are we, once we've stayed, do we lose that opportunity to move on?
I feel like, in a sense, we're not supposed to know everything. And I think that you get that rare glimpse, an occurrence, or seeing, just lucky at that moment. I do believe that there is something where we pass away. Investigating the paranormal has led me to believe that. I think as far as that house goes, I think it's just one of those rare places that every way it should to let entities in and out and let them do what they want to do. And I feel like they believe it's their place. I think it could be possibly the land, also just the whole area right there. I think.
What about you, Rochelle? Do you ever have concerns from what you've seen and these spirits that do seem landlocked or time locked? Do you ever worry about how you might end up in the afterlife?
My religious side doesn't really, I don't really worry about it. I guess I'm try to be the glass half full type of gal. And I don't like to think that anyone's stuck anywhere. I have theories on why someone's there. Like, maybe it was a happy place for them and they have loving memories and it was the happiest time in their life or when they were there. And maybe that's like heaven on earth to them. And that's why they're still around. I think of maybe like something happened that they wish they could change, or, and now they're going to help other people that come in so that it doesn't happen to them. I don't like to think that people are stuck. I just, that would make me extremely sad. I don't know. I think it's my religious side or my fairy tale side that everything is like, will be okay in the end. And that I think that if people are there, that they are there for a reason and because of a choice, like their choice to be there.
Okay. Very cool. Well, the documentary is out, available, 14 cameras recording for 24/7 for 2 full weeks. Kendall and Vera Welpton, Brian Murray, Rochelle Stratton, they had high hopes of capturing real paranormal evidence. And from the get-go, strange things begin happening on this documentary. They've dedicated themselves to pushing and going a little further than anybody ever has when it comes to exploring a haunting like this. You want to check it out. We've got a link up for the Sleepless Unrest documentary. It's on today's program guide. Just Google Sleepless Unrest and you'll be able to find ways to watch the show. But if you just use the link on today's program guide, that'll make it the easiest. What's going on for you guys next? Obviously you said you're going back to the Conjuring House soon, but I'm sorry about the cancellation of the A&E version of your show. I enjoyed watching you guys. I thought it was a lot of fun to see a new force of blood kind of moving through and investigating. And I love that you guys took it as seriously as you did, but you had fun doing what you were doing as well. Where do you go from here, Rochelle? What's on the docket for you?
Well, we have a few things in the works that we can't talk about. But you won't see the last of the adventure team. We will be around.
Awesome.
You know? So, you know, you understand. We can't talk about half the stuff.
I know.
Have to wait. Follow us on social media.
That's right.
So when we can't announce, we can't. You'll be the first to know.
Excellent. Yeah. Very good. Well, thank you both so much for joining us today, spending some time and giving us some insights into your experiences there. And again, the footage you guys caught, some of the doors, the things moving on their own, that just for the scene of something crawling in the bed with that couple was enough to give me the willies. So well done on a fun documentary. Thank you guys for sharing with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Been a pleasure. Brian, thank you again, sir. I think the audio finally gave out on Brian, wherever he was at. The spirits have overwhelmed him. We'll just send him good luck and good prayers. Give him our best next time you talk to him, Rochelle. We appreciate
it. Okay, will do.
Folks, remember, tune in tonight. We've got the live video stream. You can find it on the Darkness Radio YouTube page. Go click the bell, follow, support that page. It's free. You can go in and watch live video streams when we do them on Thursday nights. The podcast version will be available tomorrow, but we'd like you to be there tonight and interact and be a part of it. It's on our YouTube page or on our social media pages for Darkness Radio. So make sure you go check that out. For that guy, I'm this guy. You've been listening to that show. This is the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.